Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't been troubled by the secret visitations of aliens from Mars. My name is Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. I do hope the journey up the lifting platform into the belly of this mechanical wonder wasn't too nerve-wracking, but I was offered the opportunity to take tea inside a cutting-edge mechanical fighting machine, and I couldn't say no. I find it reminiscent of the machinery employed in a certain role-playing game one might have dabbled in on a rainy Sunday afternoon. Of course, I'll be using this creation for something rather more civilized than warmongering, and between you and me, I'm hoping I'll convince the owner to replace the laser cannons on the shoulders with tea urns. We must be at least 5 meters off the ground up here, and whilst the view isn't as complete as that provided by the lighthouse, I think the view of Bodmin Moor is still rather splendid. Do take a seat on one of the cushions Latimer has brought up. I'm afraid there's only room for my armchair and one for my guest. Do be careful to avoid touching any of the buttons on the display with your derrieres as you find a cushion. I would hate to accidentally blow up a shrub or small mammal. If you look to your right, you'll see the famous Dosmary Pool, which is bottomless, as legend would have it, and will soon be passing Jamaica Inn. I imagine the cannons may have scared off any local highwaymen. More's the pity.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived. A Mr. Paul Cornell.
Ah, marvellous. Let's see his calling card. There's no motif. Paul Cornell, writer. Well, that's rather succinct. Do bring him up, Latimer, and once he's inside, could you start this thing off at a gentle pace? Not too fast. I don't want to spill the tea. For those of you who don't know, Paul Cornell has written comics for Marvel and DC and is currently writing Wolverine. He writes for television, including Doctor Who, and is also a novelist.
Mr. Paul Cornell, ma'am.
Hello, Paul. Do come and sit down. How are you?
Oh, I'm a little high off the ground for my taste. Okay. You've got a comfy little space. Yes.
Just for you. If you take a seat, I'm sure that the lurching movement will be easier to bear once seated. Would you care for some tea?
If you can keep tea in one place, absolutely.
I have a special tray that's designed with a water. I won't go into the details, but I'm sure that we'll be able to cope.
The question is, can I keep tea in one place after I've drunk it? That's much more vital for me right now.
Well, I do hope so. Perhaps I could offer you some mints afterwards, should you feel troubled. How do you take your tea?
I'm lactose intolerant, so can I have some soy milk, please? And six sweeteners. I'm not even lying. Six sweeteners, please.
Six sweeteners? My goodness, yeah. I may have to start a tally for my guests, and you might win, even after many, many guests have been here. That's marvellous. Well, I'm sure that we have some in the larder. We brought one with us. It's a very small larder, but it should do the trick.
I thought you meant you brought one sweetener with you.
No. So, I'll pour. And would you like a slice of lemon drizzle cake?
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Yes, Latimer made it this morning. He's a very skilled baker.
Mmm.
Now, in my invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
Well, I have this. I know it's impressive. It's been ill-used, it might be said. It's a little roughened. Perhaps it could be said there are bits missing. But it does still fit, as you can see, neatly in my pocket. It's a cricket ball, which I keep on my desk. And lately, my small son has taken to playing with it and gnawing at the seam, a gesture which would not meet with approval on many, many cricket fields, I think.
Ah, yes, because it affects the curvature of the ball. Is that right? If you make marks on the ball. Is that actually true?
Yes, it's very much true. The idea is to shine one side of the ball and roughen the other, so it moves in the air according to which side is which.
Goodness me. And is there a story behind this particular cricket ball? Is it one that you've won a game with, or...?
Oh, I did take a rather nice caught and bowled with it once off Doctor Who writer Gareth Roberts.
Excellent.
But it's just been around for a very long time. And whenever we go to America and get Americans to play cricket, this is the ball they play with.
Yes, I have heard tell of such things.
They're kind of culturally programmed to get sports very quickly, so they do pick it up very fast.
Excellent. Probably much faster than I would, I imagine.
Well, try it. Catch.
Oh, good. Oh, dear, that's rolled. Latimer? It's all right. Latimer will find it. I promise you, we'll make sure that you have it back. So, some things that I wanted to comment on, when you gave Latimer the calling card and he brought it to me, it simply had Paul Cornell, writer. And I have to say that I think that's remarkably modest, because you write for kinds of media, comics, television, audio plays, but it has no mention here of being a singer.
Well, there's a good reason for that.
Oh, there is?
Yes, I'm not a singer.
Oh, no, I wouldn't be so cruel as to say that. You have already entertained so many people with your singing. But the other thing that I expected to see, or hoped to see on the calling card, was something about being the ultimate host at conventions. Because you introduce people to each other, people who are related or know each other as well, but mostly people who don't know each other, and it's something that I've been very grateful of in the past.
Well, thank you. Mostly people who don't know each other. I have introduced brother to sister, husband to wife once they were already married. My card only says writer, and I was devastated to hear Chuck Wendig call that pretentious on the first edition of your podcast. Oh, I'd have chosen something else. And I note that we are out on the wild and windy moors as we speak outside of these windows, and I was wondering, well, I might give a little rendition. I'm moved by the spirit of Kate Bush to bellow forth and add to my repertoire with a second go at Wuthering Heights. Do you think we have time?
Oh, well, I think perhaps a verse or a refrain or two would be wonderful. But everyone, do hold on to your teacups. It can be rather rousing. Latimer, put that rifle away immediately.
But, Mom, he was about to attempt Wuthering Heights, and we're not even on the correct moor.
Now, Latimer, I'm sure you've dissuaded our guest adequately. There's no need to be so impolite. Well, I'm sorry. Here's your tea back, Paul. Please do excuse my butler. He's rather sensitive to cover versions.
What a wonderful butler. He's so violent.
Yes, I know. It's one of his many strengths. Now, talking about introducing people to each other, are there two people that you would love to introduce to each other but you've never had the opportunity to do so?
That's a really good question. I do think that I'd like to introduce somebody to somebody else and have it end up as a big romance. I'd like to be that guy. I've never done that. I've done a lot of introducing of people in professional ways, but I've never successfully match-made anybody. Indeed, my attempts at matchmaking generally end in, you know, the destruction of villages, things like that.
Heavens!
It was long ago and the wench is dead. But,
So that was your fault. Ah, yes, well, the pieces fall into place now. Ah, that's very romantic.
Well, I try to be, but unfortunately the people I decide fit together do not.
Oh, I see. Well, I would hasten to add that I don't believe that villages being catastrophically destroyed as a result of your matchmaking is romantic, rather the sentiment. You'd like to do that. Now, one of the many things that you have achieved is winning a Hugo for the SF Squeecast. Mm. And I had the absolute pleasure of being there when you collected it and bouncing up and down and being rather squeeful myself. I was wondering, as a Hugo Award-winning podcaster, if you've got any advice for beginners and those taking their first gentle, tentative steps into the vast wilderness of podcasting.
Well, I think it's good to remember that brevity is the soul of wit, and trying not to talk over each other. It takes real doing, takes a lot of learning. All my favourite podcasts are done by people who, you know, have put some time and effort into learning how to do this stuff. And I did for the Hugos, when we won for the Sweetcast, because there were five of us who were all going to do acceptance speeches, I did the shortest ever acceptance speech. I just said, ta.
Yes, I remember. It was wonderful.
I've got to try and beat that in the future. I bet, you know, just make a gesture or a slight noise or something like that. Assuming I ever win for anything again, which is doubtful.
It's just a grunt.
That would be tremendous. maybe when I'm 90.
A polite grunt, I'd like to add.
I'll be one of these hugely bearded 90-year-old SF writers who'll just shamble up to the mic.
I look forward to that. So, the other thing that I wanted to ask you is that something that I very much respect about you is your ability to promote your work and yourself, and all of this despite being British. And you seem to have overcome this kind of inbuilt reticence that we have about talking about things, and I was wondering if you could tell me how you've overcome this burden.
Well, I think you are one to talk, frankly, considering that I'm being interviewed as we speak on a mech crossing a moor. I mean, it's hardly reticent, is it? tell that to the village back there.
We narrowly avoided that village, I hasten to add. There was only one cow that had a slightly damaged tail.
Well, it was the same for me in the last Hugo ceremony. But I think that I'm a great believer in promoting your own work. There's a negative attached to all this. People say, oh no, self-promotion. That's doing it badly. If you do it well, people will be entertained in the process and will feel a nice, humane, warm feeling towards each other as well as to you, and nobody ever thinks that this is self-promotion. But, you know, I'm just not a believer that we should all shut up and be good little boys and girls and, you know, not tell people about what we're doing. When people notice it, it is people doing it badly. And, you know, this is people doing it badly will fail to promote themselves. So, you know, this is a self-regulating system. It doesn't require anybody to be judgmental.
It's something that I find incredibly difficult. And I must admit, the other day I was having a cup of tea and I thought, what would Paul do? Would you believe that? I actually thought, what would Paul do in this situation?
What was having a cup of tea?
No. As in, I should probably have explained what else I was doing at the time.
Well, now I'm really wondering.
I was thinking about various ways that I could tell people about Tea in Jeopardy and how I could tell people about it without being annoying. Mm. And one of the people that I look to for guidance on that is your good self, sir.
Well, thank you. I would just go on Twitter, actually. That's my solution to everything.
Yes. And speaking of the Twitters, I did ask if there was anything that people would like me to talk to you about. And, of course, being the individual you are, there were dozens of answers, so I can't please everybody in the virtual tea room. But there was something that caught my eye, because a couple of weeks ago I was sitting in the living room with my better half, and I was bemoaning the fact that Captain America has a costume that is very easy to make into a ball gown or adapt into a ball gown, because it has very striking stripes and stars colours, and I've been thinking about such things of late. And I said, if only there was a Captain Britain. And he said, well, there is. And I discovered it. And then today, several people asked, in fact, if I could ask you about Captain Britain, and I was astounded that you were involved with this comic hero.
Oh, yeah. Created by Chris Claremont in the 70s, written by a cavalcade of good writers like Alan Moore and Jamie Delano and all sorts of people. Yeah, I wrote Captain Britain for about 18 months.
And lots of people want to know about MI13 and whether you had anything else planned or...
I do not. I'm entirely Wolverines now. And I think it's important to always go forward and to never look back. And, you know, because I can feel that siren call of looking back. I always can. And just like the things you hate in other people are the things that you most hate in yourself. I think that I know my own weaknesses and try and alter my character to compensate, and thus always forward, and thus no Captain Britain until people get heartily sick of me being that Wolverine guy, at least.
Is this something which can be rather difficult if you have a very, very passionate fandom always calling
well,
you back?
Well, I have several.
Yeah.
very passionate fandoms that always call me back, and I'm not going. Bye.
I should imagine that you have to be rather thick-skinned and very calm in certain situations.
I'm not calm at all. I'm a bundle of nerves almost continually.
Nonsense. Perhaps you're duck-like. I mean that in the kindest sense.
I'm quite ugly as a duckling. No, that's a swan. I'm duck-like.
As in paddling furiously beneath the surface, but looking quite serene on the top. I should say swan, but I like ducks more.
Yeah, and you know, if you throw bread for ducks, they'll go after it, and swans probably won't. If you throw bread for me, I'll go after that.
So you have recently had a novel published called London Falling, and I have been hearing about it everywhere, and indeed I was present at the launch in London.
Mm.
And I got rather drunk, I seem to remember. There was a lot of wine.
Oh, yes, the tales. The tales Chris Ludd tells about you.
Really?
My goodness. And Chris was pretty far gone himself. We found Chris's autographed copy of London Falling in the rafters of the Phoenix Club 6 weeks later. I kid you not. I had to post it back to him.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, my goodness. We were rather drunk. But we had a fabulous time.
Mm.
Now, I was going to say endured. I think I'd like to say I have survived being a panellist on Just a Minute.
So the word you're looking for is won, I believe.
What? No, I didn't win. Gareth won by a point.
Oh, yes, and the audience hated him for it because he beat you.
Poor chap. There were so many times over the rest of the weekend where people came over to him and said, you shouldn't have won. I thought that's rather unsporting. He won fair and square. He was excellent.
Yeah, but they liked you. Oh. You see, you'd self-publicised yourself very well.
No, I had just admitted to a dreadful crush, that's all. People can relate to somebody having a dreadful crush and being horribly nervous.
Are you going to get China Mieville on this podcast?
Oh, good gracious, no, Paul. No, no, no.
You could have put him in jeopardy. You
no.
have to warn him.
No. Stop this at once. Because...
Of course, he would... It'd be hard to put him in jeopardy with that extraordinary physique.
Now, stop it. Because I'm actually blushing whilst we're recording, and this is absurd.
I put that together with an extraordinary intelligence and great artistry. It's extraordinary. I can see where this crush is coming from. I really can.
This is very cruel. No, and... What I'm really quite upset about is the fact that we're talking about China Mieville again, and this is only the third time that I've invited people into my tea lair, and I thought it was bad enough bringing it up in the first episode. I thought, no, I won't do that again for at least 10 episodes, and here we are talking about China Mieville. People are going to think that I'm obsessed. I'm not obsessed. Now,
no.
Indiana Jones, yes. Han Solo, yes. But not... No. Anyway, where was I?
I'm now trying to pin down your type. There's quite a gap.
Oh, yes. I'm very flexible, and I do like variety.
So is China.
Oh, no! Oh, the mental images. Oh, Latimer, bring me my fan. No, not that fan. The other fan. Goodness me. Oh, goodness, sorry. The trouble with these strange mechanical war machines is that one can't open the canopy, so I can't even open a window for air. Goodness. Now, I think that was rather unfair of you, Mr. Cornell.
Sorry.
And as punishment, I would have you describe London Falling whilst adhering to the rules of Just a Minute.
Oh, no. Okay. Right. So that's no hesitation, deviation, or repetition.
Indeed.
London Falling is an urban fantasy novel about the adventures of a small group of undercover police detectives who discover, upon being given the sight, the ability to see the magical creatures of the underworld, that they must fight them using real police methods. It's kind of like Buffy or The Wire meets The Bill, if one can describe a novel in the terms of another medium like that. It took me a long time to write. It was an ancient idea of mine that just came together when I saw the characters very, very... Damn.
Oh, you were doing so well. I was so distracted by thinking about China Mieville, you probably could have got away with that.
Were you counting a minute, or was I just going to be there forever?
No, I was actually counting a minute, and I think you got to almost 40 seconds. No doubt Latimer will tell me that I'm terribly wrong, but you did very well. Okay, I'll let you finish without the pressure of no hesitation, deviation, or repetition.
I almost got there, I think. I'm very pleased by the success of it. It's done particularly well in the States, and there's a sequel coming out, The Severed Streets, in December, which is best described as Jack the Ripper is back and he's killing rich white men. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite bowled over by the loveliness of the reviews, and it's been a really good experience. I'm glad to be a novelist again. It's what I most want to be.
I remember you saying something about this at the launch, that it was the medium that you were most keen to kind of feel you were making, you know, a lot of progress in. I find that quite interesting, because there are so many people that I know who would dearly love to write for Marvel and DC and get involved in comics, and television is, you know, sort of the holy grail, and yet you want to be a novelist.
Well, yeah. I just think it's the purest form, it's the most satisfying form in the end. Everything else is great and is social, and there's a lot of money, but novels are kind of, you know, it's me and the typewriter. Well, not that I have a typewriter, me and the keyboard. And that's really important for me, that internal thing.
That's interesting. Well, the lemon drizzle cake is almost gone and the teapot is empty. It's been a sheer pleasure, apart from the slight moments of torment in the middle, to have you here today, Paul. Latimer will show you the way out.
This way, Mr. Cornell.
Oh, thank you for having me. I must take care not to grab any of these knobs on the way out. Absolutely not.
Yes, don't touch any of those. Oh, and Latimer, would you find that ball, please? There you go.
Thank you.
Take care now, and do be careful on the platform on the way out. It is a little windy.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
Well, what a charming visitor, wouldn't you say, Latimer?
Yes, Mum.
Look at him, strolling off across the moor, a true English gentleman. Is he saying something?
No, Mum. I believe he's singing.
Why are we going in this direction, Latimer? Shouldn't we be heading east? What does that noise mean?
It's the proximity alarm, Mum. It means the mechanical fighting machine is about to tread on somebody.
Somebody? Not Paul! We can't squash Paul Cornell. What would fandom say? We would be social pariahs. This is terrible.
Indeed, Mum. But at least he hasn't reached the chorus yet.
I didn't mean the singing, Latimer. I meant the squishing.
Oh. I don't seem to be able to stop it, Mum.
Oh my. We've squished Paul Cornell. Maybe there's a chance we can save him.
I'll bring the spatula, Mum.
I don't understand. Latimer, there's no sign of any remains. Latimer, where are you? What are you doing up there?
I took the liberty of reviewing the squish cam footage, Mum. As I suspected, he seemed to make some sort of gesture and then disappeared.
Disappeared? Could he be under the foot?
I think not, Mum. I should imagine he's far away by now. I saw something similar
in... Oh, not another Burma story, Latimer.
In Swindon, Mum, in the late 1970s, when the fashion for flared trousers created a type
of... Latimer, I'm in desperate need of a cup of tea.
I understand, Mum.
Well, dear guests, thank you for joining the splendid Paul Cornell and I today. The next time we take tea together, we'll be joined by literary agent Jennifer Udden. Last week, I asked her advice on what to do should a blue police box land on my lawn. Whilst I'm tempted to follow Danny Davis's suggestion to stow away, because everyone knows that stowaways have the best adventures, I'd like to raise my teacup in respect to Fee Phillips for reminding me that even unexpected guests should be shown a certain level of courtesy and polite conversation. She then went on to suggest a bowl of fish fingers and custard for the guest. Well, each to their own. Before Latimer shows you out, we'll be sure to shut down the machine, I have another question for you. A friend of mine had the good fortune to visit New York recently. However, he encountered a man in the corridor of his hotel, dressed in a grey jumpsuit, and covered in what he described as something horribly slimy from head to toe. He tells me this chap is becoming a local celebrity, despite his preference for jumpsuits. Dear listeners, I'm hoping to be able to visit that amazing city myself one day, and I'm rather concerned the same may happen to me. Should I ignore the slime? Offer the poor chap a handkerchief? What does one do? I'd be very grateful if you could furnish me with an appropriate response, should the fellow happen to be in the same hotel as me. All suggestions are welcome, particularly the outlandish and comedic. Do be dears, and leave your answers at www.teaandjeopardy.com. I'll pick the best one, and share it with you the next time we take tea. Well, until next time, my cherry blossoms. Now, Latimer, after you've shown them out, we need to talk about this machine. It just won't do. Find a new location for the secret tea lair, would you? Perhaps somewhere with a nice, cosy fire.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman on the Geek Planet Online Network. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.